With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Kings and queens, welcome to the Football Ramble. I hope you've had a good Christmas and you're having a lovely new year, because that's probably what you're doing whilst listening to this. The chaps are with me. Pete's here.
Yes, I am. Hello.
Luke is here.
All right.
James or Jim completes the sexy trio.
Hello.
You're not including yourself in the sexiness market.
He's mate. Outside looking in, he's a voyeur. what a perv.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful, probably. 2010 is upon us. Mm. And we're going to have a...
Yeah. Are you going to be calling 2010 or 2010?
Mm. And are these the teens? Yeah. Have we got a word for the kind of... Anyone knows what to say, email in.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we've gone from the naughty to the nastiest.
But we ignored the naughties for most of the decade. Yeah. It's only now we're retrospecting it that we actually say that.
Oh, dear.
It's difficult time travel.
Should we do a football show while we're here?
Why not? let's look back at 2009, if you will.
Okay.
Gentlemen, something that's happened in 2009, perhaps a player, a team, a moment, a match, a tournament, a sending off, the possibilities are endless. A highlight of 2009. Luke, what have you got for us?
My highlight of 2009 would probably be I really, really enjoyed the Confederations Cup.
Oh, yeah.
That would probably be mine. Obviously, Brazil were victorious in a wonderful final.
Yeah,
against the US.
Let's not forget, US made a really good account of themselves.
Was it the second goal by Donovan? Was a beauty.
It was on the break.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rapido quick. Yeah. So that for me, that was a superb tour. And I think the reason I sort of hold it in such high esteem is because I probably wasn't really expecting that much sort of close season.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, well, I might as well watch it. You know, it'll be good. I present a football show, so I might as well watch it. and in all seriousness, it was a really, really great spectacle. The only thing that sort of... And I know it sort of run as a sort of dry run for the World Cup for South Africa, but those vuvuzelas annoyed me a little bit.
Right.
But apart from that, you can't really say. Oh,
there
yeah,
was a couple of great free kicks in that tournament. Danny Alves in the semi final, and the South African, I forget his name, against Spain, who smashed one in from about 30 yards.
They didn't really do an awful lot apart from that, South Africa, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it took Spain to extra time.
They're not a great...
Extra time they took them to? I think it was extra time.
They're not a great side, though, in general.
Interesting to see Spain lose as well. We're talking to the US.
Well, the US! They're on the right team, I think.
I mean, also, the final was brilliant, and it was great just to see such an interesting, like... brilliant spectacle of a final, because you really don't expect it from a tournament like that, and it was just, you know, it gets you excited ahead of the World Cup.
Definitely.
It really, really whets your appetite.
I lumped on Brazil as soon as they went two down as well.
James, 2009 highlight thingy.
Well, my highlight of 2009 would be the Champions League final, because as some listeners will probably remember, Marcus and I were lucky enough to actually be there. And it was just the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
It was
the
great
atmosphere
final.
Yeah, it was a superb final. It's an absolute lesson in football from Barcelona from as soon as they scored the goal, really. And just, I've never known an atmosphere like it. We were talking about this at the time, Marcus, but I think the only thing that would probably come near it would be the World Cup final, which, just chaos. It was just absolute, just pure adrenaline, just excitement everywhere. It was brilliant.
It was dreamy.
It was.
It was a great game. You know, obviously, I watched it from the comfort of my own sofa, I wouldn't be able to get the sort of atmosphere or anything like that. But in terms of a final, I mean, it was, like you said, it was a footballing lesson. It was one that, you know, you'll remember for a very long time, definitely.
And we had a nice run for the bus after.
Yeah. I fell over, banged my knee on a rock.
Let's go through that again.
If you're interested in that story, maybe just...
Yeah. Fucking turn your iPod off. Do something more interesting. Jealous!
But mine would be the highlight of 2009. Do you know what? It's actually one that's gone throughout the whole year, and it's to do with the promoted sides into the Premier League. I think it was great to see that. I think it was the first time ever that more than one promoted side stayed up at the end of the 2008-2009 season. And the promoted team is doing so well this season. I think that's been a real highlight for me.
Birmingham especially have done absolutely brilliantly well.
Be interesting to see if a couple of sort of the yo-yo teams like Birmingham will be able to consolidate and just actually stay up there and make the league a bit tougher. Because I mean, we're seeing this season the top teams are getting beaten all over the place. You know, it's really actually affected the league.
Five goals already, something like that. But Birmingham have gone about 11 games unbeaten. If they can strengthen in January as well. You know, they've got a chance of really. Oh, they're not going to get to Europe, but they could finish sort of around mid table, which would be a good achievement for them. They can possibly really kick on. I think Alex McLeish has done a really good job there. I don't think people are making enough of it, to be honest.
He's built them, hasn't he? He's done really, really well.
Yeah, Pete.
Yeah, that man brushing his teeth.
That's great stuff. That is a good one.
Yeah, hands down. I mean, what's better than seeing a man brush his teeth?
That was at Stamford Bridge, of course.
I get a bit of a tickle every time I do it myself. I mean,
I've got a mate who doesn't like listening to people brush their teeth. To him, it's like when you scratch your nails down a blackboard. Mm. He can't be in the same room as someone brushing his teeth. And he went through a phase of when he was brushing his own teeth, it'd always make him sick.
Oh, yeah. What a weird thing.
So you won't see him down Stamford Bridge with a toothbrush.
Maybe you can get that sort of gum that you kind of. It's a bit like a teeth clean.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'll pass it on.
Yeah, if you want.
The gum that's a bit like a teeth clean.
I don't know what you're talking about,
but
I'll pass
God's
it on.
Name. Yeah, it was, oh, like a chewing gum.
It wasn't the best description.
I meant like a pair of gums that are connected to teeth. It's difficult, man.
But you've got to say they've got to clean his teeth because Newcastle got relegated and you're very disappointed about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't have that many highlights this year. But we're doing all right.
Let's
have a quick recap of the highlights. We've got the Confederations Cup, we've got the European Champions League, promoted sides into the Premier League with a man brushing his teeth. Most hated things, most hated people, teams, players, moments, most hated things in 2009. Lukey, we're looking at you to go first here. We're not looking at you for that particular...
Well, you are looking at me. But you're usually looking at me.
You're not one of my hated things.
Yeah, but basically, mate, wherever we are in a room, we're standing next to you, aren't we? So,
it's not very nice. Not in the spirit of Christmas.
Smashing Christmas jumper he's wearing, I can tell you.
It's got a wolf on it. It's not a Christmas jumper.
Isn't it?
Unless you're a wolf.
Yeah. Wolves celebrate
just
Christmas.
It. Be weird.
Don't they?
Anyway, this isn't my highlight.
Just ask Mick McCarthy.
All my jumper.
go on. Hated things.
Well, mine would probably be the debacle at Portsmouth. Now they've been issued with a winding up order, so it's all going from bad to worse.
Yeah.
It's been a woeful year for Portsmouth, really, overall. It's been a year to forget after the sort of highs of the 2008 Cup final win. So I'll go for Portsmouth. Just in general, Portsmouth Football Club.
The team that you love.
Yeah.
James?
I would like to go for the continuing existence of Sepp Blatter.
Okay.
Just, I mean, it's the whole thing with the sort of the Irish... and French cheating fiasco, just the way it was handled and the way they sort of very quickly made it clear that nothing would happen after sort of... Well they dithered and... dithered, and at the same time, it seemed like quite a speedy process for FIFA. And it was just like, what do you do?
But he's a highlight as well, Blatter.
Well, is he? I don't know.
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon.
Is there a way we can get Rage Against the Machine to run FIFA from now on?
I'm going to jump on the bandwagon that because mine is that Jack Warner's still involved in football.
Ah, yes.
God, both of them.
Yeah.
He's worse, actually. Yeah.
Going straight to the top.
I think Warner's worse as well. Because I think Warner's actually. Seth Blatter is rubbish.
But he's got a job to do.
Yeah, Warner just doing it for himself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Pete.
Well, I've got to go for Ashley's general kind of...
Oh, Mike Ashley, yeah.
Movement.
He's still around.
Movement, he's still around, he's still clinging on, he's waiting till we get to the Premiership, but noises out of St James's Park, early 2010, the transfer window, it's going to be a lot of people leaving.
Oh, really?
More of the accumulating to speculate.
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. Another, I think an honourable mention for highlights of 2009, Maradona and Argentina.
Yeah.
That rollercoaster ride
that
to the World Cup.
That game against Peru was... one of the best games I've ever seen.
That's been so up and down. That unbelievable
stuff.
Yeah,
that kind of falls halfway between the sort of the horrible and the good because, you know, the thought of Messi and some of the other fantastic players they have not at a World Cup.
Oh, so that'd be
a horrible one.
Yeah,
but it was so great to see this kind of up and down thing going on.
Mm. I got this.
And him slagging off the, you know, keep sucking to the reporters and all that sort of stuff.
That was
terrible behaviour, but you've got to watch it.
No, I love that. That's wonderful stuff. But I've got this mental block that, like, in my head, I should be thinking, oh, well, you know, we can't like, have Messi and all these other players at the World Cup. But at the same time, I can't bring myself to ever cheer Argentina. Yeah. It's like last week where I was watching the Manchester United Hull game. And I was with a friend of mine, and I was cheering when Hull were doing well, and when Hull got a penalty and Hull scored. And my mate was like, "You're supposed to be a Pompey fan. You don't want Hull to win. They're a rival." I can't cheer for Man United. I just can't do it. I've got something in me. I can't.
It's weird because like all these crazy things have happened in football. People have come in, spent a load of money, and then buggered off and just left people in an absolute state. The only thing that I'm sort of clinging to is I think probably Roy Hodgson. He's my sort of hope animal. He's my hope figure.
Yeah, he's the sort of guy that you focus on when everything around you is spinning around.
Roy, what next? What are we going to do next? Yeah.
Please be my granddad.
Yeah. I think the rise of Fulham, I think, has been quite a good
Well, I think it was today or yesterday, he was given a year's extension to his contract, I think, a rolling yearly contract, which I think is going to be the future of football management, to be honest. Yeah,
I'd love him to get the England job ahead of Redknapp.
I was about to say, it would be between him and Redknapp, really, if Capello quit after the World Cup. I don't think Capello will, but...
Well, Capello's not going to be here forever.
Exactly.
And I'm sure the FA will like to go English if they can. Yeah, but wasn't Hodgson in the frame before Capello?
It was a little bit tentative, though.
Yeah, okay.
And of course, we've moved into a new decade as well. So, any outstanding stuff from the past decade? I'm sure.
Nothing.
No.
No. Nothing.
Awful. Okay. All of it rubbish.
My player of the decade would undoubtedly be Zinedine Zidane.
Despite missing 4 years of the decade, he wasn't just heads shoulders.
That iconic image of him walking off, walking past the World Cup after he got sent off.
But that's so typical of him, wasn't it? Because I think that was his 14th red card in his career.
Something like that.
He's from the rough, tough streets of
I think he's got one more sending off than Vinnie Jones.
Has he?
I think so.
Yeah. The man is heads and shoulders above his own hair.
Yeah. Exactly.
So your highlight of the decade is Zinedine Zidane.
Well, it's great that, in my opinion, and I may be overstating the case, and I'm sure people will tell me who I am, but in my opinion, Zinedine Zidane is the player, sort of so far, because we've seen him play and retire, he's the player so far that, for me, along with possibly Ronaldo, is the player that our generation is going to be remembered for.
Absolutely.
You know, he's the only one, again, possibly with Ronaldo, who could really mix it up there with the very, very best, you know. And so, for me, he's got to be... Okay. He's got to be the number one player of the decade and also one of the best players of all time.
Of course. James, it's an outstanding thing.
For me, the personal highlight was probably Arsenal going whole season unbeaten.
And just the manner in which they did.
Yeah, they did it just for me.
The Invincibles, but don't include cup games.
Yeah. it was a superb achievement. And the way in which they did it was just a joy to watch. It was a lot of fun, which I'm still paying for now. No, it's a stupid thing to
call. It's sort of like Jens Lehmann is in that.
It's sort of like a superhero going, oh yeah, I can take anyone on, but just like, not murderers. that don't count. No, I'm not a superhero when it comes to murders.
Yeah. Pete?
Not a highlight, but probably my lowest point that I've experienced.
Well, it's an outstanding moment. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. England being knocked out in 2002. I just think
Brazil.
It was just such a hopeful time. We were so going to kick on and do something there, but
Turkey semi final, Germany final. It would have been. You fancy that?
I just remember being so incredibly sleepy for one.
Yeah, it's like seven in the morning.
So incredibly annoyed at myself for even hoping. Yeah, what annoyed me more.
Brazil down to 10 men. It was so sickening.
It was so weird as well to be so gutted at like 9 o'clock in the morning. Thinking, what do I do now?
It just started.
I was living with my parents there. I went back to my parents' house because it was a nice day. Got the barbecue out, had a few sort of burgers, or whatever. Obviously had a few burgers, and then went to bed.
Do you want to barbecue yourself?
No, remember, a couple of mates.
Oh, okay, right.
Not you, obviously.
Owen scored our goal, didn't he?
Yes.
And then it just looked like it was the script was there. Like, let's get in there, and then...
The script was written for England to somehow massively fuck themselves over, as always, you know. Especially when Brazil were down to 10 men, and not only were... It wasn't even so much that they were down to 10 men, it was the fact that England just completely panicked. Yeah. If they had 9 men, we still would have lost.
I think if it was 0-0, it wouldn't have been half.
No, exactly. We were in front, shit!
But we always do that. In Euro 2004, when we scored really early against France, it was like, ah, God.
Yeah.
And you know we're going to balls this up. Same again with Portugal, when Owen scored that absolutely blinding volley. It was like 2 minutes in, it was like, oh, God, this is going to be a tough, tough game now. It almost goes against England to score early, because they panic.
England must be the only country in the world. I mean, and if anyone else in any other country in the world would tell us, but we must be the only country in the world where the commentators have actually said, oh, you don't want to score too early. They actually said that. Yeah. Imagine that's such a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah. Actually, in that after the France game, there was a French restaurant in Hornchurch in Essex near where I'm from that was smashed to pieces. Not by me, mate.
James is a fine, upstanding member of the Essex community. He would never do that.
Right-minded person. I'm going to go for a player in the last decade, and I'm going to go for Ronaldo. Because, now, a lot of people might think, well, he's injured a lot, and where is he now, and that kind of thing. Well, 2002, people thought he might have been finished after 98, you know, with injury and all the rest of it.
He was only very young then.
He was only very young then. 2002, he was the top scorer at the World Cup. Wonderful tournament. He had a number of good years at Real Madrid, of course. And then, middle of the decade, he kind of tailed off a little bit. Yeah. 2006, okay, he was a bit lardy and all, but he got the record for the most goals scored at a World Cup.
Which is an unbelievable
achievement. And then he kind of went to Milan and then he had an injury. And again, people thought he was finished. They really thought that was it. And he's now at Corinthians, and OK, he is a bit fat and all, but he is kicking ass.
He's still got
in the Brazilian league.
There's a video of all the goals he scored for Corinthians that's on YouTube somewhere, and the footwork of him, even now, is unbelievable.
But he'll never lose that.
He's one of the greatest strikers to ever live.
Phenomenal. I genuinely
one of the greatest players ever to live.
Yeah.
You know.
Hopefully he'll get in that World Cup squad one last time.
So the last 10 years of the man's career are just fascinating. Coming back.
He's had his off-the-pitch sort of ups and downs as well. Which makes it even more interesting.
At that moment with the transvestites, of course.
Yeah.
I think honourable mention as well for the decade is the fact that the English clubs have just done so much better in the Champions League. They've been involved in six of the finals, which is
You've got to mention the sort of Sky-sponsored Premier League, really. how it's massively sort of skewed the playing field across the board. And we wonder how long it will go on for, what's going to happen
in
the next decade.
It moves in cycles, doesn't it?
We were talking a few months ago, before the season started, about whether, the sort of influence and the cycle of countries performing in European competitions was going to move over to Spain with all the players that have gone there, and Xavi Alonso, Cristiano Ronaldo, all those sort of things. Kaká as well, of course. But, I mean, I still think English teams will do quite well in the Champions League this season, so maybe it will continue into the next decade as well.
We were talking about Arsenal being a highlight for Jim, but I mean, how many times have they qualified for the Champions League? They've qualified nine or 10 years.
They got the final as well, 2006 final,
earlier than that, was it? Oh, I can't remember.
It was 2006.
Yeah, 2006, forgive me.
But it's like, I mean, I know they've got a lot of bills to pay and stuff, but that can't be bad for them.
No,
like, qualifying every year.
They're one of the only teams that's living within their means, aren't they?
Semi-final last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Their problem is they can't beat English teams in Europe.
They've been
knocked out by Chelsea, Man United and Liverpool.
I wish my club had those problems, James.
I'd like to make a little honourable mention to Hoffenheim.
The German
side, who were top at Christmas last year. I think they were top, or they were certainly near the top, and they finished in the top half of the table, sort of sixth or seventh. I'm sure someone will
be massively sponsored by a really big business.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's one thing I love, it's little clubs getting massive cash injections and just acting ridiculously.
but they played good football and they didn't have any big names. They were a small side with a small support. And whether cash or not, they didn't sign loads of good names. They got a few African guys on board, nobody knew. And they did really well, and for 6 months of that season, they were pretty much top.
Listen, I don't think we can be snobbish and say that, they have loads of money, so they become big. Because every other big club's got loads of money. It's good to see everyone mixing up. That's all right. Wolfsburg have got to be a German highlight. We're in the league for the first time in their history. Having a bit of a sort of indifferent time in the Champions League this season, which is disappointing, really, for me. I thought they'd be really good at home. They've been knocked out now.
Also, Villarreal, they were like a sort of non-league club half an hour ago.
Oh, with Riquelme.
And one were there, Riquelme, playing for free for Boca Juniors.
Yeah.
Back at Boca.
Yeah.
There we go. That's kind of rounded it all up quite
back
nicely.
Back at Boca. Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Gary Megson has been sacked.
Megson out.
Yeah.
They've been saying that since literally the day he got there.
They've
not given him a chance. in the most emphatic way.
Before he got there, there was a poll in the local newspaper in Bolton saying, which manager do you want? And Gary Megson came bottom with 1.7%.
Yeah, and this is incredible. The person who finished above him was AN Other.
So anyone but him.
Literally anyone but him.
I like how the chairman just sort of went, it's like, what was that film where this guy guy was he had a bet on that he could turn the ugliest girl in school into a prom queen.
Is it called She's All That?
She's All That. Yeah. It's like they went, I'm going to sign Gary Megson as manager. And
some sort of controversial social experiment. But I've got a little one for you then, boys. How many times has Gary Megson been sacked as a manager in his career?
Three times.
Five times.
Five? Yeah, five times. He's one of those managers who's got such a disdain for the fans of a club that it can only ever end in tears. You remember when he played that like second string in like their biggest ever game in their history, like the UEFA Cup game there?
Disgraceful.
Yeah.
And that was to rest the players for a game against Wigan, wasn't it? Which they then lost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Dear, dear. Well, the Bolton Wanderers Supporters Association chairman, that's a mouthful, I can tell you. Gareth Robinson.
Go out more.
He said, from the Supporters Association side, I think Gary's problem was the fans did not know him. In the 2 and a bit years he has been there, he didn't come once to the Supporters Club, and a lot of them seem to be glad now he's gone.
It's funny because he hasn't actually done that terribly a job, especially looking at his old record. I mean, he's there
that
to keep them there.
Terribly a job.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, there's a few names been touted around for that job. Peter Reid, Darren Ferguson,
I read,
Alan Kirbishley, the usual names. Yeah. Mark Hughes, maybe.
Is it me, or is it just every single time a manager is sacked, the assistant manager is Steve Wigley?
Yeah, I was thinking exactly that. Right.
They'll take a limit bolt temporarily. Yeah. And he'll take over temporarily, he'll win a couple of games, they'll give him the job, and he'll be absolutely shit. Mm.
Do you think they're going to give it to Wigley until the end of the season, and then maybe they're lining up a little lad?
The Wiggles.
Jose Mourinho.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to come back.
I should do what Reading did with Bobby Mihailov. Do you remember that?
What was that?
You remember Bobby Mihailov?
The Bulgarian keeper.
Yeah, he played for...
He used to wear a wig.
Yeah.
Yep.
But he was a brilliant keeper. And he
had a brilliant wig. I had no idea, Pete.
He signed for Reading, and he obviously never been to England before, so the Reading manager and chairman sent him a video of them, but he sent them the video of the playoff final, and they thought that Wembley Stadium was their home ground. He was like, oh, this is amazing, I'm interested. And he was signing for them and stuff, and I think when he turned up at Elm Park, he was like, oh, is this the training ground? And they're like, no, this is it. You know.
An ounce of research would have saved exactly. him a lot of trouble there. But yeah,
they could do that at Marina, they could maybe...
No, Marina's not going
to... Fly him to Manchester... Get him in a car, like a tinted car.
You're
there.
Not hoodwinking Mourinho.
Well, I don't even know.
He
wants to come back to England.
He says, I want to be back. I'm not the kind of guy to keep his feelings hidden. I have always said the same. I love it here. I love it here. I love it here.
Hmm. Do you think he's doing that to unsettle Ancelotti, perhaps, ahead of the Champions League game?
Could be, James. But speaking of Chelsea, the top race has opened up a little bit.
Mm.
And I was at Chelsea Fulham, incidentally.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. The Fulham fans were winding them right up for about 60 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, and then they lost.
They
and
talked.
Then
two,
It's only a short walk. They were singing, there's only one team in Fulham, that kind of thing. It was all good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm interested to know what the actual atmosphere was like, Marcus. Is there a sort of big hatred between them? Because it doesn't seem like the most sort of animated
derby. There's no hatred.
It's not intense. It's not a Portsmouth Southampton rivalry. Really.
No, nothing near.
Your yummy mummy is not as yummy as you think. Rah rah rah.
That's just an example of the chance.
Of the laugh.
I can remember when I've been to a Chelsea Fulham game a number of years ago at Stamford Bridge, and where it was just after Mohamed El Fayed got turned down for British citizenship for the fifth time, and all the Chelsea fans bring their passports down, they're waving it at the director's box.
That's an effort taking your passport.
Yeah, it's quite funny. And when Liverpool go to Stamford Bridge, they'll get their £10 notes, don't they? Wave them.
Oh right, yeah. It was quite funny. There was an American bloke sat he was about a row or two behind me, and he kept shouting stuff out, and it's just so funny to hear an American guy. Like, I think he was
Paul Pesca-Salido, sit down.
Hey, you should be a Nazzle.
I can't see the match.
He's like, oh, Bellac, that's a suicide ball.
That will never stop being funny. If America win the World Cup, and they've got the best, most competitive league in the world, it will never stop being funny.
You imagine whoever collects the World Cup, if they win it, he'd be like, oh man, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just...
Woo!
Yeah. Go team!
Yeah.
But Chelsea are going to be losing four of their big players for the African Cup of Nations, Drogba, Essien, Obi Mikel and Kalou.
Which is particularly awkward, because that's two massive first-team players and their obvious replacements.
Yeah. But it is. I think that's why he's been playing Sturridge recently.
He looks a good player, Sturridge.
He is a good player, I think.
He nearly scored a great goal, actually.
I think he's got a bit of a problem with he must have some sort of attitude problem, though, going to Chelsea from Man City. I mean, I know he's seen all these players coming in, and he was asking for... I mean, if reports are to be believed, and possibly they're not, but the reports were like he was demanding 60 grand a week for his new contract. He'd only played about two games, I think. And so, God knows what he got at Chelsea, I'm not sure, but...
Yeah.
I mean, fair play to him, he's getting his chances, you know.
But at United aren't going to be losing any players.
No.
I mean, it's a real chance for them to gain...
I just don't see... You know, there's something about Manchester United that you can't quite put your finger on, which is that they're doing okay. Them and Arsenal are pretty close. They're winning games that they need to win, Manchester United, to a certain extent. But they've lost five games already, and they don't have that sort of sheen of invincibility that you associate with them.
Definitely. Absolutely.
And they did have it earlier in the season. When they played City, and when they had a couple of late goals against whoever it was, I can't remember, it was like, yeah, they've got that still. But now it seems to have gone. And I don't know whether it's just because of their defensive problems they've had, which will obviously right themselves in time. Well, it did start to right themselves against Hull, I suppose. But even then, that wasn't a vintage performance. I don't think they deserved to score three goals in that game.
No, I think the thing with Man United, though, is that they are very much capable, especially at this time of year, of going on a long run of winning games.
But you don't think they're going to win.
Yeah,
they play poorly and they'll win.
Yeah. And they're very, very good at sort of those wet Tuesday nights in ridiculous places where the players, you know, for a lot of clubs almost wouldn't be up for it.
Well,
they're very, very
cold.
Good at getting those results.
It's second nature for them under Ferguson.
Absolutely.
Because Ferguson drills it into them, you know. I think he very much has that sort of work ethic. He's never lost that. No matter how much he's won, no matter how much he's achieved, he's always got a drive and that work ethic which is instilled in his players. I mean, it's hard to see someone like Ryan Giggs or Paul Scholes being as consistent and as long serving as they were without Ferguson.
Absolutely. And you can see how much he still loves it every time they score a goal.
Oh, he does, yeah, absolutely. He'll be dragged out of there. I mean, I think he may go. If they win a couple of things this season, I think he may go.
Do you think if he knocks Liverpool off their fucking perch, he'll
call
it a day then?
Yeah. Well, exactly, yeah. But I don't think... But going back to your original point, I mean, they're obviously going to miss big players like that, but I don't think it's going to derail their title bid as much as everyone's saying Chelsea. I think Chelsea will still be there or thereabouts. I'm sticking with my tip for the title for them, which I've been saying since the summer, I don't see any reason to change that. And also, you've got to remember that because they've appealed that transfer decision, they can still replace those players. And they're not short of money. There's been talk in the papers of them signing players in January, so they could replace those players. There's nothing to stop them doing that.
Mm. Well, Chelsea didn't beat Birmingham City the other week because of a superb display from Joe Hart.
It's been so good recently. It was consistently impressive. And not just sort of commanding this area and thing is, I do think there's a couple of question marks over a couple of little things from what I've seen, but he's in a brilliant shot, so he's made some outrageous saves.
Yeah. Do you think, though, I mean, personally, I'd like to see him in the England squad.
I would as well.
I've said that for a little while, but now, you see, would he maybe be a bit like Ben Foster in the sense, you know, Ben Foster, when he was playing for Watford, was superb.
Mm-hmm.
When he went to United, it's a different back four, vastly different back four, vastly different type of game he has to play, longer periods without making a save. I mean, Joe Hart has played at Manchester City, maybe not a top four club yet, but at the time they weren't. Would he? Do you know what I mean?
It's just experience, though, isn't it? The thing with that, with the Ben Foster's example, and Joe Hart may well be the same, is that it's very with at Manchester United, Ben Foster will be doing a lot of things he hasn't necessarily done before. So he'll be playing the Champions League, like you say. He'll be playing in a game against sort of really pedestrian Premier League side. Well, like you say, he wouldn't have anything to do for ages. But it's all about maintaining that concentration.
But he strikes me as a real confident lad. I mean, he's only 22, but he comes across as if he's 32.
I think so as well.
But sort of chest out.
And also, there's no other keepers in great form at the moment for England, so why not give him a nod? The only problem is we're running out of time with games between now and the World Cup, and you can't just send him as a first-choice keeper when he's not got any sort of experience at all.
Yeah.
He did look a little bit dodgy when he played for England, didn't he? He looked a little bit out of his depth, I mean, which is you sort of expect from a goalkeeper on international debut. That would happen from time to time.
It would be a massive punt taking a 22-year-old goalkeeper to a World Cup with very little experience.
It's weird, doesn't it? Because, I mean, Theo Walcott went to the World Cup when he was, like, an amoeba or something.
Yeah. And that was ridiculous.
Didn't get a game. He didn't get anything, did he?
But I think it stunted him in a way.
Maybe what we need to do is take him as part of the squad, and he may not get any game time, but he'll have the experience.
He might not handle any suicide balls.
But he'll have the experience for the next World Cup, maybe, you know.
Yeah. Lionel Messi, he's been crowned FIFA World Player of the Year for 2009.
Love to see that ceremony.
Yeah.
It involved
a massive deal.
And that's no surprise. Yeah. No surprise at all.
No, I think it's the correct decision.
Well deserved.
I was hoping Iniesta or Xavi, but really.
Well, Messi's had a wonderful year.
He has had a wonderful year.
He should have been in the highlights of 2009, shouldn't he?
Mm,
well,
he should have, really.
Well, James, he was in, because James put the Champions League final,
true.
Which he played a huge part in. The FIFA Pro World 11, was Casillas in goal. Yep. Real Madrid's Casillas. John Terry.
He's always in it, Terry.
And Nemanja Vidic for Manchester United. Patrice Evra for Manchester United.
Yeah, he's mental.
Dani Alves, pleased to see him in there for yeah. Barcelona. Xavi and Iniesta, Barcelona, obviously. Steven Gerrard?
Mm. Well, it's voted by sort of fellow pros, so you can't really argue with it.
Obviously, Messi. Cristiano Ronaldo and Fernando Torres.
Some team that is. Yeah.
No place for David Nugent, but there's always next year.
Yeah, he must have just missed out.
And the Brazilian Marta was named Women's Player of the Year for the fourth year running. And England's Kelly Smith, I think, was third.
Yeah, she's very highly rated. Mm. Marta, when I, last time I saw Women's World Cup, Marta was absolutely superb.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me. She, without sounding like massively condescending, she actually looks like that Marta. She'd be properly decent in like a men's team. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that anyone else wouldn't, but she looked like she...
Hey, let me handle this one, Luke.
You're a northerner.
Andy Cap.
I'm not
away from the microphone.
I'm notably condescending
to
women.
You're banned from this subject.
Well, I don't think any of the... Oh, hang on a minute. There was a bloke who was... managing in Serie A, who wanted to give play the first woman.
Yeah, her name was something Lundberg, wasn't it?
Was his name? Who was he managing?
I can't remember.
He was a chairman.
Some
nutcase.
He wanted to sign Colonel Gaddafi's son.
Yeah, yeah. It's Perugia.
Yes.
Yeah. One thing that has happened is that Ferenc Puskás goal we were talking about, they picked your goal.
You said it was
the semi, but it was in the quarters, wasn't it?
It was in the quarters. All right.
Yeah, see, I'll never give something without taking something else away.
His mother will vouch for that. So I got that one right. Now, I saw an article in The Sun. Forgive me. which it annoyed me so much I thought I'm going to have to bring it to the Ramble table. And the headline was Messi taunts Premier League. And all Messi said in his taunting of the Premier League, he said, the arrival of Cristiano Ronaldo and Kaká at Real make the Spanish league stronger than the English. Players want to come to Spain. But we have to recognise it is the English clubs who have reached the latter stages of the Champions League recently.
That was it. Was he going,
article, it said Messi then sent a World Cup warning to England by vowing to shine in South Africa. Now, this warning to England, God's own country, reads like this. I feel badly when people criticise my performances for Argentina. I had the luck to win everything with my club and I want to do the same for my national team. I mean, for crying out loud, he's taking the piss out of
me. He is.
Whoa, we're fired up now.
He needs some anger management issues. He's got way over the top.
He is deluded.
With that taunting.
Call it mess or...
Yeah. So,
that's pathetic.
Pathetic journalism.
Almost as pathetic as when tabloid newspapers and the sports pages use the word exclusive of almost every single story, even though it's in every other paper all the time.
Read our exclusive wording of this story.
Yeah, tabloids are pricks.
Well done indeed. Norberto Solano, former Villa and Newcastle midfielder, of course, is joining Colchester, apparently.
Colchester United, the U's.
That's very true.
He's going down Layer Road.
Is he really?
With his trumpet.
Yeah. He's a beautiful boy, as Sir Bobby Robson, the late, great Sir Bobby Robson once said.
He is, yeah. Very much so. Another South American has been talking in the press. Ronaldinho says he wants to finish his career with a golden key.
He's gone mental. You'll see him trying to climb into a Game Boy, coming out and things like that.
I love those things.
By winning a championship in Brazil,
there's loads of things like that don't really translate well. Yeah. Do you remember that Roberto Baggio's autobiography is called A Goal, But Also a Gate.
Yeah.
It clearly has no translation in English. That's just the nearest thing they can think of.
What was that thing Romario or someone shouted at Romario? He said, Romario is a chicken and this team is full of chickens.
No, it was something like, this team is full of chickens and Romario is the biggest chicken of all the chickens. Or something like that.
Kind of does translate.
It rolls off the tongue.
Perhaps not as punchy as they might want.
I think Ronaldinho actually is probably one of the sort of the saddest stories of the decade as
In
the way he didn't seem to sort of live up to what he could have been. I genuinely think he could have been up there with Zidane in the sort of tone we were talking about him earlier.
Well, I think he was. Yeah. I think he was. He was you know, FIFA World Player of the Year, and he was phenomenal when he was on song.
I think you just really need to... You can't underestimate the amount of how much you need in the head as well as the ability. But the amount of people that I've spoken to about people we used to play football with, or someone played football with someone else, and said, oh yeah, I'll play football with... Gary O'Neill's an example. Someone said to me they played in the same team as Gary O'Neill, who's obviously at Middlesbrough now, and said, oh yeah, he was nowhere near the best player in our team. Yeah. But he just had the drive. He was at training every single time.
That's right.
And he was there early and he was there late and he had the discipline. And I think if Ronaldinho had that work ethic... What I'm saying is, if Ronaldinho had the work ethic of Gary O'Neill, he would have been one of the decade's best players. Well, he probably was one of the decade's best players. Yeah. But Jimbo's right when he says he had the ability, or he has the ability still, probably, to be one of the world's best of all time.
He was the catalyst for Barcelona being even what they are now, because they were floundering, and getting him was a real, real coup. And they've had two great teams this decade, and he was a big, big part of the first one.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And he did it quite well, because he went to Paris Saint-Germain, you know, and it, not one of the biggest teams in Europe, and he got into European football that way, and then he went to the big side, you know, Barcelona. But he said, I've never had the possibility to win the Brazilian championship. And he said, seeing Adriano, who's a friend of mine, become a champion,
the emperor,
with Flamengo, has given me inspiration.
That'd be great.
I like that, the old boys going back to Brazil.
Yeah,
I say old boys,
it's a current trend, isn't it?
Nice. If you were an English footballer and you went overseas to play, you'd want to finish your career in England.
Absolutely,
I think it's absolutely fine. Like, it's great. Right. And also, you got all the parties and stuff like that.
He's a controversial character.
I mean, when he was at his best, he seemed to be able to just like choose to score free kicks.
Oh yeah, the ball was on the string. It's like Zidane. Zidane's control of the football, and Ronaldinho was very much like that. It was almost completely telepathic.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's that one famous clip of Ronaldinho when he gets pulled up for a foul, and the ball's at his feet, and he's looking over there like talking to someone, giving like instruction to his teammate. He just rolls the ball over the top of his foot, and as it pops up in the air,
he just backheels it back into
the referee's hands. He's not even looking. He's looking over there. It's outrageous. You know, and that sort of level of skill, that sort of born, God-given skill, is something that, you know, only comes along every so often.
Have you seen speaking of Zidane about 3 seconds ago? Have you seen his son on that clip?
Enzo. Named after Enzo Francescoli, the great Uruguayan footballer. Who's Zidane's hero, incidentally. I don't know why, but that's just the case.
Well, let's move away from controversial footballers who have fallen by the wayside.
There we go.
Sepp Blatter?
Joey Bolt?
No! Oh,
I can't ever think that you've ordered these new stories. It's this sort of master plan that you've got.
On my placiate of ramble joint.
Speaking of things on a list...
What's JB been up to then, Martin?
JB. Yeah. Most footballers are knobs, he's come out and said.
He said very loud over the massive sound of the crashing of the glass in his house falling around him as he was throwing an unusually large stone.
In a remarkable sense of self-awareness, Joey Barton says.
Did he go on to say present company included? If not, I'm not interested.
He says, I meet a lot of them and they are so detached from real life, it's untrue. But there was a stage when I was like that.
What they need is a good fight.
most footballers in this room are knobs.
What they need is stabbing in the eye with a cigar. Yeah. I don't know. He said that you grow up in an environment where as long as you're a good player, you're told that you're the best all the time. But whether you're the best footballer in the world or the best golfer, the best cricketer, you're a human being. You might be good at that sport, but you might be crap at life.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
He's speaking about himself here, presumably.
But he did say, actually, with regards to himself, he said, I'm very thankful to the media of this country because he said, you know, the vilification in the press... And in the media helped him to confront several issues, which is the first I've ever heard.
Well,
this
is the first interview he was given after Sporting Chance, isn't it?
Okay, right.
And so I'll stop short of saying that he's a changed man and we should all give him another chance. It's not EastEnders.
He's done this before.
Yeah. But I mean. He's obviously got a pair of brass balls in to come out and say that.
He weirdly also said, there are things that the media picked up on, like bad things I've done, but there have been others.
Rather sinister, yeah.
Keep digging, riddle me this, Batman. Yeah.
There's gold in these hills. Well, maybe he's a changed man.
You can always live in hope.
Well, he's claiming to have been sober for 2 years, isn't he? Which could genuinely make a huge difference.
Well, that's what he sort of said to the judge in his recent problems that he's been having.
But the Sporting Chance clinic has a lot of a lot of sportsmen go through it and with great success. And Tony Adams done a great job there.
Yeah.
And the only reason Joey Barton was on that radio show when he gave that interview was because Tony Adams was the guest editor, wasn't he?
Oh, right.
And he gave a pretty frank interview into it. You know, so maybe if he's off the beer for a couple of years and he's gone through that depression stuff and he's come out the other side, who knows? Hasn't he got a foot injury at the moment?
He's very nearly back.
Okay, right. So I mean, we'll see, won't we?
Well, we wish him all the best.
Well, like you were saying before the recording, you were saying we'll wait and see what happens with someone. Gives him a big two-footer, which will happen, because the first thing you would do if you were playing against Joey Barton is give him a kick.
He's a marked man, that's the problem, and off the field.
Yeah, of course he is, yeah. Mm. Yeah. And, I wish him all of that, you know. If he can turn his life around, then fair play to him. But at the moment, he sounds like an idiot.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
Farmyard emails.
It's the first I've heard of them. But we're going to press on with them. Pete.
I've got one. This is from the Nuge. It's from a man called David Nugent.
Are you being serious?
He says, I apologise for the length of the email, and my name is genuinely David Nugent.
Oh, it's not actually David Nugent.
Just started... No, his name is David Nugent.
But it's not the...
It's not David Nugent,
I'll zip back up, then.
I just thought I'd mention that, as Lukey Moore idolises the man so much.
Correct.
So he just had to clear that up for you.
What's in Merseyside's most famous son?
Rambleforce, ho!
Ho!
Firstly, apologies for a rather long email. However, I was inspired by your induction of Bill Shankly into the Dwarf. I waited with bated breath for you to recount one of my favourite tales of Mr. Shankly, but unfortunately you did not. This is from the pages of George Best's autobiography. Here goes. In 1967, we arrived at Anfield to play Liverpool, and as I glanced out of the window of the coach, I saw Bill Shankly standing at the main entrance. Imagine this in an Irish accent, presumably.
Yeah. It's completely pitch.
I was the first player to alight from the coach, and when I reached the entrance, Bill shook my hand warmly. "Good to see you again, George," he said.
Is that your Scottish accent?
"You're looking well, son." This was unusual for him, and knowing that Shankly was a bit of a wily old fox, George Best decided to hang around to find out what he was up to. As each of the United players entered Anfield, Shankly shook their hand, welcomed him, and told him how good he looked. Eventually, when Bobby Charlton turned up — he's a bit of a born worrier, apparently, Bobby — he came to Shankly said, "Bobby, son, good to see you." I've dropped the accent. But by God, if there was ever a man who looked ill, it's you, Bobby. And Bobby's face went as colourless as an icicle. "Ill? I look ill? Hey, Bobby, son."
He's back again.
"You look like you're sickening for something. If I were you, I'd see a doctor as soon as you set foot back in Manchester."
That was Irish, that end of it.
No.
Well, it's George Best doing an impression
of Bill Shankly.
Pete, you're practically from Scotland. It should be easy for you.
This is quite modern as I come.
Shankly patted Bobby on the back and took off down the corridor, leaving him trembling in the foyer. Eventually, Matt Busby entered the dressing room with Jimmy Murphy and told us that they had reshuffled the team, which had beaten West Ham the previous week. Bobby Charlton was unavailable.
He'd been taken ill.
He's suddenly been taken ill.
That's brilliant.
The following season, we were back at Anfield. Shankly was up to his old tricks. As the United party made their way down the corridor to the away changing room, he appeared from his office. "Guess what, boys?" he said, brandishing a little orange ticket. "I've had a go on the tickets that'll give the time when the away team will score. And it says here, in a fortnight." With that, he disappeared back into his office. We lost 2-0.
Hey,
he's like Jareth from Labyrinth.
He is.
Like tricking people with his crystal ball.
Should have gone straight to the castle.
You do remind me of the baby.
Yeah, the babe with the power.
As he said, that's from the Nuge. That's from David Nugent.
Cheers, Nugenio.
Cheers, the Nuge.
Nugito. James, if you would compose yourself.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, you lovely little ramblers, you. All right, that's what it says. Just dropping you a little email to let you know of a little game that's sweeping this rather arctic country of late. Heads and voles on ice. That's volleys, not like the woodland animal, voles. Right, so I'm Welsh, and as you might know, the weather here has been somewhat cold since the beginning of time. And lately we've seen weather that can be described as nothing short of bloody cold. Well, me and my mates live near a canal that had frozen, and guess what happened next?
Oh, God.
We laid some goals on it and dared each other to play, and we did. The game lasted all of a minute, as in the middle of the goalkeeper rested his leg on some unstable ice and consequently fell in.
This is like 999.
Don't do it. You've got young listeners. Don't any of you do this.
No. He was unharmed but contracted a rather nasty case of man flu. Terrible thing to have at Christmas, but we hear there's another spat of cold weather on its way, so maybe we'll give it another go. Love to all your mothers, Tom the Boat Moore.
Tom the Boat Moore?
On the river. Lovely.
That, Tom. That's dangerous. That's like some high adrenaline version of football, yeah.
Lukey, have you got one for
us? Yeah, I've got one. All right, Ramblers.
Oh.
I'm a new listener to the podcast and was having a gander at the website. I was amazed to see the remarkable resemblance the skinny guy, the one with the pointy triangle haircut, that's you, Pete.
Hey.
As to Robert Nepper, the bloke playing the gay guy from Prison Break. Has this ever been spotted before, and does he have the same homicidal tendencies on the footy pitch? Cheers, Tony in Hong Kong.
Somebody said this on Twitter as well.
Well, you look like the guy from Prison Break.
A Google image. I've never had a more depressing Google image search, to be quite frank.
Oh, you were.
He's not a good-looking fella. He's about 50.
Is he?
Unbelievable.
And he's playing a gay bloke.
Yeah.
Oh,
gay.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. P.S., if any of you get out here for the Hong Kong Soccer Sixes, let me know and I'll get a game arranged with some beers afterwards. We took Mike Riley out a couple of years ago and I can assure you that man has no coordination on the dance floor. But where was me thinking he's John fucking Travolta?
What, Mike Riley the ref?
Yeah. Thanks for the offer, though. That's from Tony in Hong Kong. Thanks, Tony. We'll bear that in mind when we actually get two pennies to rub together between us. We may well make a trip out.
We got one.
But let's get a picture of the guy off Prison Break on the website, Pete.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Let's humiliate you as much as we can.
Come true.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Which, to be fair, last week, because of your new haircut, you was getting Hitler.
Yeah.
You're getting the Hitler, so
moving on.
Well, no, when I put it up.
Genocidal mania.
When I put it up.
You're getting very good. You've got Hitler, you've got some bloke off Prison Break who's not very attractive, and Jedward.
Yeah.
You're not doing very well, isn't it?
Well, both of them
together.
Yeah. But yet, standing here, I'd kiss you.
Yeah. I have.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
I've often thought about it.
Good lads.
Any more lookalikes, send them in. We've had the old Lukey Moore Johnny Depp one, so don't bother with that.
I look almost exactly like the radio presenter Jeff Lloyd.
You look like Ellen DeGeneres. So Marcus, who's getting the Championship Manager goodie bag, mate?
It's got to go to Tom the Boat Moore.
Well, the ice footballer.
reinventing the game.
Don't try this at home, children.
Yeah.
We're not endorsing your activities, but we appreciate the banter.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's profile time.
Ooh.
Chaps, cast your little minds back to when we spoke to Dean Windass.
Mm.
Do you remember who he wanted inducted into his Hall of Fame?
Vinnie Samways.
It wasn't Vinnie Samways.
It's Paul Gascoigne.
It was Paul Gascoigne. That's who we've got.
Gazza! Hey.
Oh. Mm.
This will be fun.
Yeah. How long have you got? Lock the doors.
Blimey, well, where do we begin? Probably at the start. Paul John Gascoigne, born 27th of May, 1967.
Oh, summer of love!
And I don't think it's any coincidence that he was born just as it's beginning.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about, but what we're going to do here... we are going to concentrate largely on the football and the banter, because, I mean, we can talk about all his demons off the field, You know, I think a lot of people, you know, you type in Paul Gascoigne into Google, and it's all about Gazza's drunk, Gazza's this, Gazza's that. I think, hang on a minute, the guy played some football.
It's a football show, let's remember the football.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's what we're going to do. He was born in Gateshead, and he has been described as a sort of the archetypal sort of no-hoper made good by football. He caught the attention of the football scouts when he was playing for Gateshead Boys. He was given a trial at Ipswich Town, although he failed to impress there.
I think that was under Bobby Robson, actually.
Was it really?
Yeah, interesting start to their relationship together.
He had further trials at Middlesbrough and Southampton, but they proved unsuccessful, and I'm sure none of these clubs regret that.
No, yeah.
Before Newcastle United signed him as a schoolboy in 1980. At school, he was once caught practising his autograph during a geography lesson. His reason was that he said to the teacher that he was going to be a famous footballer, and his teacher at the time, who was Mr. Hepworth, he wasn't impressed, and he said to Gascoigne that only one in a million becomes a professional footballer.
Yeah.
So up his. he signed on as an apprentice at Newcastle in 1983. And that was when he got the nickname Gazza around that time. Jack Charlton was in charge of Newcastle, And Charlton said to him, he said, there's a lot of fat there, but I'm told underneath you, you've got a bit of skill.
That's what he said to me. Fat of the skill bit. Did you ever just stop at the fat bit? There's a bit of fat there.
Yeah, well, he was really, you know, really on the button with Gascoigne. He said, you know, he gave him a fortnight to get fit or get out, you know, and he told a lot of the local sort of pie and chip shops to not serve him with all this because he, you know, he loved it, didn't he?
It was like, but he did sort of, Gascoigne did say at one point that he realised as a youth player that to be one of the better youth players, he had to be stronger. So he did actually pile on the weight quite consciously.
Oh, right.
And work on weights and stuff like that.
And then sort of carry on doing and that for years.
Well, he captained the youth team in the 84-85 season. They won the FA Youth Cup. Mm-hmm. He scored twice in the second leg against Watford.
That was the year that he told Chris Waddle to F off and clean his own boots.
That's right! Yeah. He cleaned Chrissy Waddle's boot.
Yeah. Or didn't.
Yeah. Well, he's meant to. As he went through the Newcastle system, he was constantly picked on about his weight and his misbehaviour. And
I know how that feels.
Well, he got particularly annoyed at one point, and there was Pete, you might remember, there was a story about he jumped on a groundsman's tractor.
Yeah, he got three final warnings.
Did he?
At that club, but he mashed it into a changing room
or did he?
At the training ground.
Yeah. Why? Well, he was so annoyed, he jumped on the tractor and he drove it into the dressing room wall and jumped off before impact.
I'll show you behaviour.
How old was he then? Like
he was 70? Fined £75 for that.
God.
But he made a total of 107 appearances for Newcastle. He scored 25 goals. And at the end of the 87-88 season, he was named Barclays Young Player of the Year.
Mm. People sort of forget that he played a lot of his football at Newcastle United. Yeah. And everyone sort of was so much surprised when he turned in such a great performance in 1990. But at the end of the day, a lot of the Newcastle supporters were like, yeah, we've seen all that. We've seen it. Just because they weren't on telly half as much as Spurs. Yeah.
Well, he bossed Man United for Newcastle, famous, didn't he? And Ferguson wanted him. Ferguson said, I need to get you, got a Simon this player. Yeah. But he ended up going to Spurs.
Brian Robson, he came up against.
There was a bit of other players, not just him. Ferguson, he was one of the best midfield performances I've ever seen. He bossed him. He bossed what's his name? Remy Moses. Good players.
Ferguson had him pegged as replacing Robson when he left.
That's right. Yeah,
but the chairman at Spurs bought his family a house, didn't they? Yeah, so he went to Spurs.
He did say to Ferguson, wasn't it? It was very famously that he was going to sign for Man United.
Then
Ferguson went on holiday and came back to find he'd signed for Spurs. Mm.
There was a great bit back at Newcastle with Mirandina.
He had a long
running feud with this player, and he would only pass to him if he had loads of players around him.
Okay.
And people started catching on to this sort of thing, but they tried to bury the hatchet. He borrowed Mirandina's car and had a road race with it and smashed it into the wall.
I would never lend Gascoigne my car.
And Mirandina went, Paul, do you know where my car is? Like 3 days later, and it was like in a hedge. He hadn't told anyone about it.
Absolutely loose cannon.
But straight away from the off, the incredible genius. Incredible talent just the misdemeanors off the pitch.
Oh, the talent was definitely there. I mean, the thing about the World Cup 90 thing, which I'm sure you'll come on to, is he was still very young though. I mean, he's only just 23.
He was 23, yeah. Well, but just before the World Cup, a couple of years, as we say, he was signed for Spurs, and Alex Ferguson said it was the biggest disappointment of his managerial career was not getting Gazza.
Well, I think Ferguson, the general consensus is that Ferguson would have hopefully straightened him out, you know. If anyone could have done it, it would have been him, sort of thing, you know.
He would have needed a real, real disciplinarian. I don't think he really had that.
Well, no,
any of his managers.
No, probably not.
Well, absolutely. So he went to Spurs, and in his first season at White Lane, he helped Spurs to sixth in the first division and third the following season. And around this time, in September 1988, he was first called up to the England squad under Bobby Robson. And he scored his first goal for England in a World Cup qualifier against Albania. And, you know, people started saying, this guy's got to go to the World Cup. Mm. And I think he was actually, you know, it was between a few guys. He was one of the later inclusions into the 1990 World Cup squad. But my goodness, did he stamp his mark on that tournament.
Yeah.
Obviously, England finished fourth. They got to the semi-final of the World Cup. And, gentlemen, lots of things happened there.
Well, he's definitely up there, in my opinion. It was the first tournament I really appreciated.
And
it's probably still my favourite now. He was definitely, along with Lothar Matthäus and probably one or two Italians, the up there with the best midfielders in the whole tournament, you know.
Yeah. Well, he was included in the team of the tournament.
Right, where are you going?
He was a game changer, I think that's what
he was.
When he got on the ball, something would happen. And that's kind of why a lot of the clubs later in his career took chances on him, even when his legs had gone.
Yeah.
But it was just great at Italian 90 to see on the world stage that England had a proper ball-playing central midfielder.
Yeah.
You know, like a kind of a... You know, like almost like a South American kind of number 10, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Pulling the string sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. And having that sort of player in that tournament was very, very important because it was very low scoring, wasn't it? It was very, very tight. And for someone to be able to make that sort of bit of magic happen was very important.
And Gascoigne also, he knew how to keep the ball sometimes, just to hold possession.
He used to use his whole body in that
sort of. Yeah, very, very.
A lot of England players don't know sometimes, just put your foot on the ball, calm it down, you know.
They lose their heads, they all lose their heads.
Exactly, yeah. Before the tournament, the organisers of Italian 90 TV, they filmed each player mouthing their own name before the tournament.
Yeah.
And so it would go, you know, you'd see the picture of the tournament and you'd see Lineker sort of mouthing Lineker and all the rest of it. And Gascoigne mouthed wanker instead. But the BBC had to use it all the way through the tournament.
That's class.
Oh, dear. And, of course, that yellow card against Germany and all the rest of it.
Tears all over. Probably my favourite ever England kit.
Certainly. But I remember Bobby Robson in a documentary saying that Gazza, he would find him playing, you know, games of tennis in the midday sun on, like, the day of the semi-finals on the quarter-finals, and he would go mental at him. Like, Paul, you're wasting your energy. What are you doing? You know, just so...
But he used to be up all night and stuff, didn't he? He used to have boundless energy. I think that someone speculated that he may have had, like, sort of undiagnosed, like, attention deficit disorder.
He's certainly been diagnosed with that now.
Certainly RCD as well, I think. Yeah, okay. Heavily.
That's right. Well, after the 1990 World Cup, which is when he became, you know, a world superstar, really, he reached the FA Cup final with Spurs in the 1990-91 season, and he scored 6 goals on the road to the final, including that superb free kick against Arsenal
in the semi. Yeah.
In the semi at Wembley,
rubbish.
That's some hit, some distance as well.
What a free kick it was!
It wasn't just outside the area; it was from a mile away
against David Seaman. But of course. That's when he got the famous injury.
Kicking the flying bejesus out of
Gary Charles.
Gazza had actually, the deal with Lazio had already gone through.
Mm. It was originally arranged for £8 million, wasn't it? But it got to take down to £5.5 million because of his injury, didn't
he? Yeah. So I think he was really pumped up for that football, obviously, but he was really wanting to impress Lazio, where he was off to, and he just lost his head. It's as simple as that, really. It was a crying shame because he'd been such an amazing player for them throughout that.
Throughout that tournament,
you know, for the cup, he'd scored so many goals on the way there. The final should have been his
showpiece.
Exactly. So he spent pretty much the next season in the treatment room. He finally joined Lazio for a fee of £5.5 million. Mm-hmm. And no sooner he was there than he was offending people. I don't know if you remember when he was asked for a comment as he... it was just after he arrived, I think. And he burped quite loudly into the TV microphone. And that was really, really frowned upon in Italy. He just arrived. And it was, Paul, what's it like to be in Italy? And it really annoyed them.
I really like the rendition you did.
Thank you very much.
It really took me there.
Yeah. My Italian was seamless. They were really pissed off. He got off on the wrong foot with them, terribly.
It's almost as good as Bill Shankly. Shankly channeled through George Best.
And he was fined £9,000 for that. So straight away, bang.
He's £9,000 down.
So in his first season for Lazio, he's a little bit inconsistent. But he scored his first goal for them in the 89th minute to equalise in the Rome derby.
Yeah, that's why he's still revered now. Yeah. They love him then.
The fans loved him, but the media seemed to just not like him.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. He went mental when he scored that goal. It was fantastic. He said it's one of the highlights of his career.
He hurt himself trying to tackle Nesta, wasn't it? Alessandro Nesta.
Yeah, he broke his cheekbone as well.
Yeah, so he played with that... cheekbone mask, didn't he? Like the Phantom of the Opera.
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very iconic Gazza image, that. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, big time. Well, he did play really well when he was there for moments, and he was given something. Now, I've read Gazza's book, and I can't remember for the life of me why this was given to him, but the Pope
gave him like an award, or it was kind of like a medallion, or it was something of a lot of value. And he doesn't, he doesn't exactly hand these things out. And Gascoigne said that he, when he received it, he knew what he was like, and he crapped himself, going, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to lose this. I'm going to break it. I'm going to, you know, probably eat it or something." So he got on the phone to Jimmy Fivebellies.
His long, very famous
friend, or infamous friend, yeah, depending on how you look at it. And he said, "Fivebellies, get over here," because he's still in England. He said, "Get over here, and I'll pay for your flight, obviously, and take this from me and take it back to England so it's safe." You know, I don't know why he'd given it to Fivebellies back.
Trustworthy courier. Yeah.
and Jimmy wouldn't believe him that this he'd been given such a thing, and Gazza had to try and convince him, and he was so annoyed at Fivebellies for not believing him that when he booked his plane, Jimmy turned up at the airport and he'd booked a flight from Newcastle to Madrid. Yeah. Then Madrid to Hamburg, then Paris, then to Berlin. Then he took him all over Europe to
That's
get there with loads of. And he said it was one of his favourite pranks. He used to do it all the time to me, because he'd say to people, "Yeah, I'll book your flight. You're on this flight." So they turn up at the airport and look. And he said the most elaborate one he did was he sent them to like Southeast Asia, to Italy. So you imagine turning up at the airport, "I'm off to see Paul in Rome." Yet,
yeah.
What's it? Singapore.
Yeah.
That's terrorism nowadays.
Yeah.
But he loved the lifestyle in Italy, he said, and he loved his time there. But unfortunately, because of injury, it just never quite happened there. But he did have spells, and as you say, but he was dearly loved by those Lazio supporters.
He still is. He still is now. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Very much so. Of course, after Lazio, he signed for Glasgow Rangers in the summer of 95 for around 4.3 million. And he made an immediate impact there. And in his fifth league game...
In more ways than one.
Well, absolutely. In his fifth league game of the season, it was the Old Firm match against Celtic at Celtic Park. And he scored a goal to win the match, 2-0, I think it was. But before the match, he said he was so nervous. And he experienced nothing like the build-up, the tension and the atmosphere of an Old Firm derby that before the game...
This is the man who scored the equaliser in the Rome derby.
Exactly. He's played in a North London derby, yeah, in the semi-final of the FA Cup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said he'd never experienced anything like it, and he went... He quickly nipped to the bar and had a large one.
Did he?
Yeah, he nicked
a loosener.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, he said it settled him down, and he said if Walter Smith knew that, he would have just gone mental.
He does now, I expect.
Well, Walter Smith actually kind of... To an extent, obviously, as much as you can curb his behaviour.
He was a bit of a father figure to him.
He was a father figure to him, absolutely.
Because when he went to play with him under Everton, didn't he, as well?
He did, yeah, a bit
it
later.
It was a very odd choice, guys, even going to Rangers.
But it worked out, though, it really did, because I think Smith knew the baggage that came with signing Gascoigne, but he was confident he could do it, and he really got him playing there.
Yeah.
And, the night before a Rangers game... Gazza had just a couple of pints, and he said to, Walter Smith said to him, "Well, what did you do last night?" He said, "Nothing, just had a couple of pints and that." "Right, you're not playing today."
Oh, really?
Dropped him, bang, straight away, yeah.
Zero tolerance.
Very much so. And that season, Rangers went on to win the league, and they clinched the title right at the end of the season. I think it was the second-to-last game against Aberdeen, and Rangers went 1-0 down, and it was a bit of a Beckham versus Greece kind of performance, where he was the team.
Yeah.
He scored a hat-trick, and Rangers won 3-1, and his second goal, I can remember watching this, he picked it up just inside his own half, and it was about the 80th minute, and so I think Celtic were winning... And it was going in, and it was Rangers really needed to win that game to win the league. If a draw would have put Celtic in pole position going into the last day or something like that, I can't remember. But they needed to win. And he just picked it up, and he just drove. And it was such a hot day as well. And he just burst through that defence and slotted home, and just mental.
Yeah, yeah.
And then scored a penalty.
Yeah, I can remember I didn't see him an awful lot of Rangers, but I did see him a few times. And I remember just sort of thinking to myself, even at the time, he could just do this at will in Scotland.
He's
no disrespect to Scottish football, and Gascoigne is rightly loved there at Rangers for obvious reasons, but he genuinely was a cut above, and he could do it whenever he wanted. It's sort of like you put on the old computer game or whatever, and you sit on the easy setting and you're brilliant.
Yeah. Because
they're so rubbish. It's like that. You know, and not because they weren't very good. And obviously you've got top professional footballers there. Not the very top, but still good players. And Gascoigne just flew past them all the time.
He was stronger then, I think.
Oh, of course he was, yeah.
He could have been happily playing top-flight English football.
And he arguably should have been as well.
But he was so happy there, and it fitted so well. And I was fortunate enough to see him in the flesh play, you know. Rangers won the league, they won the Scottish Cup that year, and Gaz, you know, in his first season there, he's won the Players' Player of the Year and the Football Writers' Player of the Year. And they won the league again in 96-97, and the League Cup as well the following season. But this was all the time when Euro 96 happened.
Mm.
And, of course, he was playing for Rangers when they played against Scotland. And I remember Andy Gorham saying, he was the Rangers and Scotland goalkeeper at the time, he said before the tournament, he said, we just hope... Well, obviously they want to beat England, but we just hope that we one of the main reasons why we want to beat them is Gaz will be so obnoxious if they win.
Yeah.
And not only did they win, he produced a sublime piece of skill.
One of the best goals I've ever seen.
Colin
Hendry.
Colin Hendry.
And what a player Colin Hendry.
Oh, you would have turned anyone inside out.
Colin Hendry won the Premiership with Blackburn. But he was great in that tournament, and I mean that is one of my favourite moments in football. The fact that we Gaz are doing that, and then it's a celebration as well.
Yeah.
The old dentist Joe, and he lay on his back, and they squirted the water.
Yeah.
It was just super.
We had our own little tribute to that earlier. Luke poured loads of bits of like chocolate rice crispy cake down my
face. I actually called it the dentist chair as well.
Yeah. You did,
in honour.
Yeah. There you go.
I didn't even know we were doing this, but I did it anyway. Strangely prophetic and pathetic.
When he was up in Scotland, there was a documentary team followed him around because he lived in a hotel in Scotland for a while, I think.
I smell a sitcom.
It's a bit Partridge.
And they were following him around the streets, and he took him to a little Scottish cottage along the streets, and he said, "Oh, I've forgotten my key. Hang on a minute." And he knocked on the door, pretending he'd lost his key, and the door opened, and it was just the housewife in there, and he went, do you wash with Daz Ultra? And she just went and slammed the door.
The man is relentless.
Oh dear. But there was also a story about him and his one of his showbiz pals, famously Chris Evans, and they were driving up to where Gaz was staying in this hotel, and it was right on a beautiful loch up in Scotland, and as they were driving up there, I think Chris Evans in the car, they'd swapped their car, they'd stopped at the side of the road, and they went, "Look at us in this like BMW, you know, two poor kids with nothing, and now look at us." They went, "Let's go back to our roots." So they left the car at the side, went to some scrapyard, got some old banger, and just started driving up to where Gaza was staying. And they apparently, the reports say they drove across the golf course, and Evans just kept going and just drove straight into the loch. And the car sank and they had to swim to the shore.
God, this is like a top footballer. Yeah. You know, insurance on him.
This is mental.
It's like Jimmy Bullard 10-12, I think.
Yeah. I think in a way it's a little bit sad that because Evans and Baker and those people, I sort of felt bad for Gascoigne because he's very easily led. He's a flawed individual and he's a wonderful footballer. And it's a shame that he was so... he always had a drinking buddy, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, in
a way, that was the undoing of him, you know. Yeah. And it is tinged with a little bit of sadness. But like you say, we're going to concentrate on the football and the good stuff, so
absolutely. So he was picked regularly to help England qualify for the 1998 World Cup.
Yeah,
I mean, he had injuries were coming in and disciplinary problems were affecting his game, and that kind of left him. Hoddle left him out of the 98 World Cup squad, famously.
Yeah, and he took it well, didn't he?
Oh, which was a crying shame for all concerned. But he did. He played extremely well in Rome when England drew 0-0 to secure qualification. I think people forget how good and a partnership him and Paul Ince had in the middle, and Beckham as well.
Yeah, of course.
And David Beckham remembers when it was. Oh, they were on England duty, and it was when they'd qualified for the World Cup, and David Beckham said that Gazza turned to him, and he said it, Gazza and him got on really well, and he just said, "Oh, David, I love you, and I'm really looking forward to playing at the World Cup with you."
Oh, no.
And Beckham said it was such a shame looking back at it in hindsight, you know.
I thought he said, he's going to say, "I love you, I'm going to really look after you," and him going, "Oh, no." "I'll look after myself, thanks."
So I would love to have seen the situation where Glenn Hoddle told him he wasn't coming to the World Cup, and then Gazza smacked the room.
I mean, it was one of those decisions where Hoddle had to pick one, two of about three or four players, and Gascoigne was unfortunately missed out. I mean, I'm not sure whether that was the right decision or not, looking back on it. Obviously, we didn't do anything in that World Cup, so it may have been the wrong decision. You know? But I mean, you can never tell. It's just pointless to sort of speculate. But Gascoigne, I think, I remember thinking at the time that he should have been in the squad, and I was gutted. Yeah. But that may have been more sentimental than anything else. But he took it apparently very badly, because I think that's what Gascoigne was like. He was, in a lot of ways, he's like a... I don't mean it's disrespectful. He's like a child.
Very much
and he's
so.
Only becomes an adult when he's playing football. Do you
that's
know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah,
that's what he
right.
lives to do.
But it's a bit like, I don't know... You know, I would compare him in a sense, to if you watch that sort of Michael Jackson documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't know what he's doing
unless
stage,
he's on stage. Yeah, yeah,
but
exactly.
on stage, bang, you can't beat him.
I know the manager and the English FA don't owe Gascoigne a spot in the England squad sort of permanently. You know, but imagine how hard it must have been for a character like him to have to watch that World Cup. Would not be
I bet he didn't even watch it.
No.
He probably didn't know.
Well, but just before the World Cup in '98, he left Rangers to join Middlesbrough for nearly £3.5 million. First match was he came on as a substitute in the League Cup final against Chelsea. He didn't have he did okay at Middlesbrough. There was flashes, but didn't have the best of times. But there was some antics going on.
I've got my favourite.
Go
one. Can I give you it?
Go on.
He used to go around Paul Merson's house.
Yep.
And
yeah.
They used to take as many sleeping pills as they could and have bets on who could stay awake the longest.
Yeah, that's true.
Merson's a nutcase. Yeah.
That's not.
You imagine those two together?
That would be some sitcom.
Well, Merson.
Gascoigne and Merson.
Oh my God. Well, Merson made the 98. World Cup
yeah,
squad,
exactly,
of course.
Yeah.
He once stole the Middlesbrough team bus at the training ground. Took it for
crashed
a drive,
it.
Crashed it. Ten grand's worth of damage. He walked into the Middlesbrough canteen once, just wearing his training socks and something about a sausage.
Whopped his member on the plate and said, "Can I have some beans with me sausage?"
That's right.
hang on, going back to the £10,000 worth of damage in Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
What did he crash into?
Very good.
Cast,
do you hear that?
Yeah.
I think this was when he was at Middlesbrough, but I'm not sure. And when they were playing away in London once, did he not? There was a workman on the street with a pneumatic drill, and he jumped out and he was like,
"Give us a go on
give
that."
Us a go
yeah,
on
I
that.
Remember that. Yeah. Story.
Was that Middlesbrough? I'm not sure when it was, but
I've
it happened.
The,
you know?
I've heard the story. He did. I'm not sure if it was at Middlesbrough. Maybe people can fill us in. When he went, someone booted the ball over the fence. He went, "Oh, I'll go and get that."
I think it's at Rangers.
And he went and jumped on the fence and just completely disappeared. And apparently, I'm not sure if it's true.
Nobody could get hold of him.
And he disappeared for 24 hours. And apparently, to the minute, 24 hours later, he jumped back over the fence to the ball and went, "There you go." So it's a 24-hour
They all turned up to training, didn't they?
Rio Ferdinand, take note. Yeah. That's how you do a merking.
Gazza is just the sort of person I can imagine he would just overwhelm you with his personality. Do you know what I mean? These pranks are just
ingenious. Be like having a kid around. Yeah,
totally. He left Brian Robson's Middlesbrough in 2000, and he joined Walter Smith at Everton. And I mean, that kind of made sense to Gascoigne. Yeah. You know, he played under the man and respected him greatly. Gazza was shortly, after joining Everton, he was checking into the Arizona rehabilitation clinic. But he did play, he did play all right at Everton in bits again.
I remember him being very sporadic at Everton. It was pretty much the beginning of the end, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the trouble with Gascoigne. It was always a bit bitty.
He was never going to be one of those players who said, "Right, that's it." Because he lived for football. Do you remember that Alan Hansen documentary?
That's right.
And he said, and he was talking to Gascoigne, and Gascoigne was talking about... things like, I can still get back in the England squad and stuff. And Alan Hansen was like, what are you talking about? And it basically turned out that, he's got nothing. He had nothing to replace the football with, and that was his main problem. If he could have played football every waking minute,
he'd
been fine. Absolutely fine, It was just between, once he got off that pitch, it was when the trouble started.
Very much.
And the Everton thing I remember was the sort of the beginning of the end, around the sort of turn of the century,
But I do remember a couple of good performances.
He did, though. He still had the ability, of course, Like we were saying about Ronaldinho earlier, he's always going to have that ability. You know, Paul Gascoigne would have that ability on his feet as long as he can stand. There's no doubt about that,
But Walter Smith left Everton in March 2002. And Gazza, he moved on there, and he went to.
Didn't Moyes want to keep him?
I think Moyes said, you'd be included, in the squad and all. But I think Gazza knew his time there was up, and he went to Burnley for the remainder of the 2002 season.
Well, I've seen Paul Gascoigne play twice. Actually, I've seen him play once for Burnley, which. which I'd rather not remember. Okay. Remember Gascoigne for the good things. He wasn't that great then, and I think it was, you know, it was Paul Gascoigne, the name, rather than... I think he may have even been starting, so people at Burnley, the players, could be like, oh, I'm playing with Paul Gascoigne, you know, give him a bit of a lift.
Sure, yeah.
But I actually saw him play in Paul... Remember Paul Walsh?
Yeah.
For his testimonial.
Okay.
At Fratton Park, he came down and played. He was excellent.
Nice.
It was really good fun. And everyone got on the pitch at the end. And the measure of how many people love Gascoigne and how well-loved he is that when everyone invaded the pitch, as was back then the sort of custom in a testimonial, where everyone ran straight over to Gascoigne. He never played for Pompey. Everyone was straight over to him and he was surrounding him and stuff. Oh. So I actually saw Paul Gascoigne in front of the Pompey show, which is great.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And after that, he had sort of brief spells in the Chinese second division, funnily enough.
That was a documentary as well, wasn't
it?
That was a sad sort of state of affairs.
And then he was player coach at Boston United, but again, these just lasted a handful of games at most. And
Kettering as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, he managed Kettering. I think it was 39 days or something he was in charge. And then he announced his full retirement in 2004. In August 2006, he visited Botswana on behalf of the FA's International Outreach Week, played football with the children from the SOS Children's Village there. And that's an image I like.
Yeah, of course. The reason I genuinely think if we can get someone to sort him out and he can sort himself out, and hopefully he is doing that, he could be a real asset to lots of different clubs. Because of the ability he's got and just because of the fun-loving nature he's got, and if he can harness that, then he's still got a part to play, obviously.
If someone could take him under their wing as a coach and just sort of really sort of rein him in, then it could be valuable.
I've long been of the opinion that people at the FA, and rather than sort of adopting this attitude of, especially when he was at his peak, I mean, from all these things you've been saying, like from very early on when he was doing this and doing that, you could see the seeds were there being ready to grow as him being a bit unstable. The FA, I know it's not their responsibility necessarily, but now, or maybe a few years ago, the FA could have done a whole lot more to look after him, you know. He's not someone... Some people need looking after, you know. And I just think, and I may be wide of the mark, but I think that in other countries he may have been looked after a bit better. You know, maybe they would have taken the time to sort of make sure he was OK and maybe do a little bit more for him. And I think the FA could have done a bit more, perhaps.
Well, apparently Peter Beardsley recently has been doing a lot to help him out, like keeping his fridge stuck with, like, fruit and milk and stuff
that,
and really, really looking
after
him, which is great.
Yeah, I like that, Early in the career of Paul Gascoigne, the footballer, the Juventus president, Giannini Agnelli described Gazza as a dog of war with the face of a child.
That's nice.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
But Paul Gascoigne said recently that he said, I've learned that I just want to be respected for what I achieved on the pitch. I know I haven't achieved much off it, but I do know I've given pleasure to people watching me play football.
Yes, yeah,
absolutely,
nice.
He has. And he is so dearly loved still by so many people.
It's a testament to, I mean, in a way, I mean, a lot of the stuff he's done which has been silly and the things he's done that have been pretty abhorrent off the pitch, it's a testament to how actually good he was as a footballer that people still revere him in this country.
Very much so.
And that says more for his ability and his talent than anyone else could say.
And Dean Windass, the very man who owns the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, wanted him in here.
So here he is.
Paul Gascoigne.
Welcome.
Come on in. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. I hope you've had a lovely time. If you want to get in contact with us, the address is podcast@thefootballramble.com, and the website is, of course, thefootballramble.com. There's a notice to be said.
Yeah, we thought that we'd do this because we've got a football game, an 11-a-side game, against Pete's regular Sunday side.
Yeah.
Hideous Albion.
Yeah, on the 9th of January, which is a Saturday, afternoon kickoff. It's in North London at Market Road. Now, we haven't got a goalkeeper. I played in goal last time, never knowingly lobbed, as you all know. But I'm actually been required and requested by several people to go up front.
I don't think anybody...
Hang on.
I don't think that ever happened.
I'm going up front. So, we need a keeper, and we don't want to do it ourselves. So we thought, if there's any keepers who listen to the show in the North London area on the 9th of January who want to come along and play, no time wasters, because you get found out, you know.
Yeah.
But God knows Luke has.
Yeah,
but I mean, let's see if we can't find someone who's played football to a decent level. Possibly. Yeah.
To reassure you slightly, you're not going to be worse than me, so you might as well come along.
To reassure you, we are a terrible Sunday league side, so don't worry about it.
We don't want anybody crap.
No, we don't. But if you're interested and you want to come along, then email us on podcast@thefootballramble.com.
And saying North London, I mean, it's one stop from King's Cross, Mr. Caledonian Road, Market Road pitches. It's all weather. It's nothing too difficult, nothing too cerebral.
Is it a kickoff 2 o'clock?
Hard. I believe it's 2 o'clock, possibly 4 o'clock.
But we'll sort that out when we
get in touch if you fancy it.
And the people will definitely buy you a beer afterwards.
And perhaps the person with the best CV, if there's a few of you.
Yeah, give us a little Championship Manager 2010 style rundown of your skills. It rates about 20 for each thing and what clubs you play for.
Stopping, positioning,
but be honest,
agility.
Yeah. But be honest, exactly, Marcus. Yeah.
So yeah, interested parties call Luke on 07.
No.
But that's podcast of the Football Ramble. We've also, of course, still got the betway.com /the Football Ramble bets and shenanigans. I'm not going so well.
It's evening itself out, isn't it? Who's top?
I'm hoping that 2010 will bring me a little bit of luck, so to speak, some cash dollars.
And I'm hoping the class continues to shine through, Pete.
Good lad. And you can also get the Football Ramble t-shirts as well.
Footballramble.com.
The Dean Handass wall of hands. The Dean Handass wall of hands.
That's currently unavailable, that particular t-shirt.
That's from another dimension, so we can't bring you that just yet.
Oh, dear, that gives me enough time to say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Pete.
Yeah.
And goodbye, Lukey.
Why am I last? Goodbye.
Just say it.
Goodbye.
We're all off to 2010.
Ooh.
Journey with us.
What was that, a cat?
It's a cat in space. Cat, Tommy. Becky's on that new LA advert now, isn't he? Have you seen that? It's that new California advert. You know the old wing, can you start?
And then he kicks a ball in the sea.
With his left foot.
That's no good.
Why does he do it with his left foot? Most famous right foot on the planet.
Probably not allowed to use the other one.
Yeah.
Contractually.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.